following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Welcome into another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, your official podcast for Georgia Southern Athletics. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed. As things start to get fired up a little bit more, as coming out yesterday, Georgia Southern accepting the invitation to the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl. That'll be December the 23rd. We'll dive deeper into the bowl discussion a little bit later on, not only in this edition of Inside Eagle Nation, but next week as well. But first, as always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic. Yesterday's Meals on Wheels. A lot to get to in this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball all in full swing. Got to recap the Appalachian State game from this past Saturday at Allen E. Paulson Stadium. And then again, Georgia Southern accepting the invitation on December the 23rd to the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl, where they will take on the Louisiana Tech Bulldogs. Where do you want to start?
If this was on video, we could draw it out of a hat or roll dice and see what number comes up, but
I'm sure there's a sound effect for that.
Oh, if there is, we'll find it. I feel like we need to build up to App State, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that can't be right out of the gate.
All right, I know that's not really an answer, but that's my answer. Okay. Let's not start with App State.
How about women's basketball?
I can do that.
Women's basketball got the 118-48 victory over the Coastal Georgia Mariners on Saturday at noon. It was a lead-in to the Appalachian State game, a game that took a while. And, of course, when you score 118 points, it's going to take a while. But Georgia Southern got to 2-2 on the season and set a couple of records. The most notable, they had 80 rebounds in the game, setting a new school record. It was the first time since they shattered the old record in 2000 against Augusta when they had 67. So 13 more than the old school record, and now the school record is at 80. Led in rebounding by Shondell Vickers, finished with 12, had Eden Johnson with 7 as well. And one of the more impressive things about what Georgia Southern was able to do, not just on rebounding, but you look at the points, all 15 players played for Georgia Southern. All 15 scored. When you have 118 points, you expect somebody to have 20, 25, maybe even 30. The leading scorer for Georgia Southern was 15, with Simone James making her first career start. It's the first time, and Chad Jackson went back through a bunch of box scores and dug this up, first time in program history that Georgia Southern has played all 15 players on the roster, and all 15 have scored.
Look, I'd take that over winning by 70 points. That's something in and of itself, but to get everybody experience. But I think to make you feel like you actually played, people need to score. And even for some that are more defensive-minded, you can say, hey, I grabbed a rebound, or hey, I had a steal. No, someone only recognizes if you play, if you score, because that's what gets everybody out of their seats, and that's what makes you feel that you had a contribution. When you send everybody in, and everybody that touched the ball scored the ball, that's something.
Everybody had at least 3 points. It's not just everybody got a layup at the end of the game or a free throw every once in a while. Everybody had 3 points. You want something even better? And I know you're a numbers guy,
sure.
And I didn't realize this until just now. Georgia Southern shot the ball 104 times.
In 40 minutes.
In 40 minutes.
Did you play with more than one ball?
No.
Okay.
Coastal Georgia had 59 shots.
Well, I watched a little bit of it on the video board inside Paulson Stadium, and I kept seeing your score get a lot bigger. Theirs not really move as much, but that's a lot of shots.
Georgia Southern scored 31 points in the first quarter, 36 points in the fourth quarter, and talking with Coach Howard after the game, their goal is somewhere between 15 to 20 points per quarter is what you're kind of aiming at, more towards the 20 side. But to have two quarters where you score 30 or more, not too shabby.
I'm still blown away by the 80 rebounds.
Yeah.
That's something that you may see once a lifetime.
No doubt. And you had 80 total rebounds, 36 of them on the offensive glass.
That's nuts.
It was a crazy day inside Hanner Fieldhouse, and just add 55 fouls to that, and it ends up in a pretty long game. But nonetheless, Georgia Southern got the victory, 118-48. Supposed to be playing as part of a doubleheader today, if you're listening to this on time on Tuesday. But because of COVID concerns coming out of LaGrange, and that's a game that was just put on the schedule late last week, but got canceled earlier on Monday. So that one will not happen. Georgia Southern men's basketball will be in action tonight against Carver Bible College. We'll get into that in our final segment of this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. But looking at Georgia Southern men's basketball, it was a little bit of a tough weekend for head coach Brian Berg and company. Started off the weekend with the first of three games in 5 days. That'll finish up tonight again against Carver. But started on Friday night at Davidson up at Belk Arena. It was a 77-45 final in favor of the Davidson Wildcats. And really and truly, you really felt it start to swing about midway through the first half when Davidson started raining threes.
We talk about Carter Collins on these broadcasts a lot. Well, now we're going to talk about Davidson's Carter Collins, their lefty guard, who's been going back and forth between running the point and being the shooting guard. Well, he was the shooting guard last Friday when he made 7 of 8 threes. Davidson at 17 as a team. In the first half, I think Georgia Southern at least did enough to defend, but a lot of them were contested threes, but they were at home. They know the rims better than anybody else. And then in the second half, it looked like some frustration was settling in. Caden Archie didn't play much in the second half because of injury, and he didn't play in the Mercer game that we're going to talk about. Andre Saversoff the same. But when the frustration starts to mount, because when you do your job and it still doesn't come up with a missed shot, then you're, okay, what is it going to take? And that's why Davidson ended up with 17 threes. It was one off of Georgia Southern's opponent record. But like we mentioned during the pregame against Mercer on Sunday, the hope was that that was at best a learning experience. And from what we saw defensively in the first half against Mercer, it was a learning experience. Those guys came out of the locker room. They were flying. They were forcing turnovers, steals specifically. They were grabbing offensive rebounds. So I think from that standpoint, the message was received and the experience was learned from. But on the back half of that, which we'll get to, it still didn't pick up the desired result.
It was a 77-45 victory for Davidson on Friday. Got the day to a little bit of rest and recoup on Saturday. And then on Sunday, Mercer came into Hanner Fieldhouse. And again, this is a Mercer program that is what Coach Brian Berg calls a high major program. Fell to them 77-75. But you talked about it a little bit, how that was a little bit of a back and forth game. Georgia Southern got up by 16 at one point. And you really saw, like you talked about, the defensive effort from Georgia Southern really click. We talked about it on the broadcast, how Coach Berg wants 30 deflections per game, and we jokingly said, I think they had that in the first 5 minutes.
Well, it really felt like it. They forced 15 turnovers, had 11 steals in the first 20 minutes, building that lead. Now, granted, it was 11. It got cut down to 2. Both teams had sizable runs. But what helped Georgia Southern build that lead, they made their free throws. And they hadn't done that the first 4 games of the season. They were 10 of 10 at the line to start. They end up 15 of 19, which felt like a vacation considering that it was 51% as a team going into that game. And then it was a 16-point lead after a great start to the second half. Zach Bryant is something otherworldly right now. And we brought up the Tukey Brown comparison during the game, and I'm going to go back to this. It's not that I'm saying that Zach Bryant is the player that Tukey Brown is, but Zach has a dimension to his game that Tukey did not have. Terrific athlete, could run the floor, could shoot, could do a little bit of everything. Zach feels like a Division I defensive back playing point guard. And he could have done that out of high school because he had offers but decided that basketball was the way that he wanted to go. I think that he can do just about anything he wants to. He can guard bigs despite being undersized, but he is so strong, he is so fast, he's physical, he is explosive. The dunk that he had with about 8 minutes left in the first half, you've probably seen the video. It's one of the best that I've seen in 6 years doing this, and considering the guy is 6'2", and the guy that he dunked on was jumping in 6'6". Thankfully, the table that we sit at wasn't closer to the ledge because I think that we all would have tipped over.
Yeah. I think you're exactly right.
Because when I stood up, oh, geez, we're moving. Okay, we got to sit back now. We're moving.
Yeah, we're on the raised platforms. They're not necessarily the sturdiest, so you kind of got to stay idle a little bit.
And then as the lead started to evaporate, Mercer took the advantage on a layup by James Glisson. He played really well for them off the bench. It went right back to Bryant to hit the 1-1 free throw with 51 9/10 left to put Georgia Southern back up by a point. Mercer, though, just made too many threes. I think they made 8 in the second half. They were 12 of 29 for the game, and that's been a problem for the Eagles defensively, having just talked about the issues at Davidson. But then the last possession, Elijah McAdam had just tied it on a jump shot. Mercer had one chance. They tried a three. The rebound ended up going high into the air. McAdam had the board. He was tied up with 3/10 left. The arrow, number one, favored Mercer. Number two, they went to the monitor to see if there could be any time put back. They ended up adding 3/10. So what that did, having 0.6, you could catch and shoot. If it's 0.3 or less, it's got to be a tip-in. Well, that allowed Mercer to run a quick under out of bounds play. Neftali Alvarez caught the inbounds, laid it up before the clock expired. They went and reviewed it. We knew it was going to count. And it hurt, especially how well the Eagles had played the first, I would say, about 23, 25 minutes of the game. But Mercer was coming in 5-0. They hadn't been 5-0 since 1966. Now they're 6-0. You'd like to get another shot at them because I know Mercer's playing a home-and-home this year with Georgia State. I think they go there at the end of the week, and they already beat the Panthers in Macon earlier this season. You'd like another shot at them because I think this team has to learn now how to finish games in addition to starting games better, but they took care of that against the Bears. One that hurts, but another one-day prep to get ready for a game that you should dominate against Carver. And we'll get to that in our final segment, and it's coming up in a couple of hours, so this is literally going to lead you into tip-off. I still think you have to be pleased being 3-2. The fact that you played 5 games this season, it's like with football. Played 12 games. Who thought we were going to do that?
Right.
Now, to get eligible for postseason play, teams have to play 27 at this point. Typically, you'd have to do 31, but the season started later, and with over 100 games already called off, 3 weeks into the season, we've already 100 games called off. But now that you played 5, you at least have a base built up, and if you can take care of Carver the way that you should, you get a chance to practice for a couple of days before heading to Florida for almost a week, which leads us right in to Georgia Southern's bowl game as well.
Going back to Zach Bryant real quick, averaging 20 points in his 2 games that he's played after becoming eligible earlier on Friday before the Davidson game. But the thing that stands out to me, and you're going to think I'm weird for a minute.
I already do.
Yeah, I was about to say probably a little bit more than that. But 12 of 12 from the free throw line.
Yeah.
And as how good is he of getting to the basket and finishing shots through contact, to also be able to have the concentration, because let's be honest, there's a lot of people in college basketball that can dominate on the floor and then just don't necessarily put the effort into free throws. Zach Bryant, with a guy that hasn't played in a game in more than a year because of the mid-year transfer to Georgia Southern a year ago, that's impressive to me. Of you can tell how much effort he has put in to being good at all phases of this game.
Well, during his 3 years at UAB, he was north of 70% at the line. I think he had a stretch during his freshman season where he had made 17 straight free throws, so he's coming up on that pretty rapidly considering how much he should be handling the basketball against the Carver Cougars in just a couple of hours. I like the fact that he can score because the Eagles have needed that when they were down Savrasov and Archie, the top scorer on the squad going into that game against Mercer on Sunday. But adding Bryant to be not just somebody that can run the offense, but contribute to the offense by scoring. He's going to dish. He's going to defend. And the leadership that he brings. He's not just somebody that leads by example. This team is full of guys that enjoy playing with each other. But Bryant is one of the more vocal guys on this team. And all the guys I spoke with before the season, we did mock interviews, every one of them said that Zach Bryant was a leader. And that was before he could even play. Remember, he had to sit technically the first quote-unquote semester because he had to wait for his exam grades to come in. He was not eligible to play until after those were done. So he was eligible for Davidson that day. In the starting lineup, 16 points, only guy in double figures. So it turned out that they needed him. And then 24 more against Mercer, scoring in a variety of ways, not just the emphatic dunk that we saw and that got blown up on social media. Also made two threes. The one was from, I think, Hastings, Florida, where he's from, right before the shot clock expired. But knowing what he's been able to do in two games should be even more eye-opening to what he can do the rest of the season as we're rapidly approaching conference play in that new format this year.
Through five games, Georgia Southern men's basketball at the 3-2 mark. They will have three games until we talk to you again, and we will dive into those in our final segment of this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. But one more game to recap as Georgia Southern football hosted the Appalachian State Mountaineers to wrap up the regular season at Paulson Stadium. It's not the way that Georgia Southern had envisioned it going after a tough loss to the Appalachian State Mountaineers, 34-26, the final score on Saturday. And it was one that you felt that Georgia Southern really had in the first half, and then right around halftime, early in the second half, is when Appalachian State really started to take the momentum.
If Georgia Southern was anywhere close to full strength, I think they would have won the game going away.
Yes.
Because they showed that they could compete, but then injury after injury after injury with all the guys that were already out. I felt like at points the sideline looked like the one of the final scenes in Space Jam where the Looney Tunes are just on the bench and and hurting a number of different ways. I think I saw an iron lung, and there was a cooked turkey that was hooked up to an IV, and then they have to send Podolak in to make a three, and then Bill Murray has to come in at the end of the game because the roster was so short. It was to a point where, okay, what else is going to happen? And I think that we've gotten to that point multiple times this year in a number of different reasons, but it was one of the weirder games despite being the most intense atmosphere that the Eagles have played in all season. That was a live environment on Saturday night. It had never ended a season. It was back on a Saturday for the first time in 7 years. And with all the guys that Georgia Southern ultimately ended up having out and getting to a third-string quarterback in Miller Mosley, who I think did as well as he could considering he had four snaps all season before he came in the first quarter. Justin Tomlin had lost his helmet, so he got, I guess, the christening to the Georgia Southern App State rivalry. Then he had to play the entire second half once Tomlin got hurt. But for App State to not take the lead in that game until early in the fourth quarter when Georgia Southern was down to its threes and fours and most positions on defense just shows you how well that defense has played this year and how, look, the offense has taken a lot of flack this year for not a lot of very fair reasons. Could they have scored more touchdowns in the red zone? Yeah, and it cost Bob DeBess's job, and it was unfortunate, but it felt like it got to a point where somebody had to wear it, and unfortunately it was Bob that bore the brunt of a lot of those frustrations. But this defense, since that rough first three games, they have just kept coming at you. And it doesn't matter who has been on that side of the football. I was calling Reed Dedman's name so much after he was maybe in a little bit against Campbell because of all the guys that were out because of COVID and other reasons in that first game. He's a special teams guy. Quinn Williams, a great game with two sacks. Justin Birdsong getting a chance to play with Kendrick Duncan out for the rest of the year. He had two tackles for loss. Gavin Adcock, Justin Ellis, who showed up big time against Southall, had another fine game. His back half of the season has been just outstanding. Getting C.J. Wright back helped. He just became eligible the day before, getting the legal process to work in his favor, so it gave the Eagles a little bit of depth up front, and it turned out they needed it with all the guys that ended up going out. But what turned the game was losing Derek Canteen in the first quarter and then David Spalding in the second quarter, especially after Spalding, who was in for Canteen, had his first career pick and ran it back for a touchdown.
There's a group around Georgia Southern football that doesn't get a whole lot of credit that deserves a lot of it, especially this year. I mean, you think about it, that Appalachian State game is nine straight weeks that Georgia Southern has had a game.
Yeah.
And there's been some physical games in that nine straight weeks. But the athletic training staff over at football with Bryce Sawyer, L.A. Teeter, Daniel Lindsay, Brandy Boston helping out the last couple of weeks as well, and all of the students and GAs that help out over there, that group to have as many guys healthy, and you see it day in and day out. there are guys that get banged up every day, every game, and one of them is always there, and 9 times out of 10, they're getting them back in the game probably faster than you expected.
It was going to catch up at some point. It just happened that it seemed to all catch up at once against a team that you didn't want it to do so, because you led the game for much of it, and then it became a quicksand kind of deal. Virgil ran the kickoff back. Georgia Southern gave it right back on a 3-and-out. Noel busted the 70-yard run. Georgia Southern gave it right back on the pick. And despite all that, still was within one score when Mosley hit Dexter Carter on the 78-yard score. And there's a really good story about that, which we will get to in just a moment. But you think about how the schedule had to be changed on the fly with those 9 straight weeks. Would you have wanted to have the UMass game back? Would you have rather had those extra weeks, those extra days in the full week to get ready for Coastal at the time? You wanted to make sure the game was played to stay fresh and get ready for the Chanticleers. Dominant victory over UMass, which was expected, but a loss to Coastal. Would the extra week have helped? No way to know. They ended up going with their backup quarterback that day anyway, so it's just hard to say how things would have gone. And then the Army game came up during the press availability with Coach Lunsford yesterday. But that game was added during the summer, and we were all hoping to get at least to 10, 11, maybe have a shot at playing 12. You take those two games away, you're not getting to 12. You're not getting a 7-5 record.
No, and when that game was added, you had an off week a couple of weeks prior because the Appalachian State game was on a Wednesday.
Correct.
So you had 10 days, two different times in that stretch where you didn't have a game. And so it's not like it was put on the schedule where you had 9 straight games.
Look, we know how physical the Army game was, and we know what kind of impact it had on those guys. But, I mean, if it had been a win, I'm sure it would have felt a lot better. Because it's easy to look at guys that are banged up a little bit more when you lose a game by a point. And I know that that's a very kind of gloomy way to look at it, but that's just how you are. You look at it through a certain lens, a certain prism. If you win, maybe the injuries aren't that bad, but if you lose, we have so many guys banged up. The mental effect of having the game by 2 scores only to see it blown, it hurt. I mean, it absolutely hurt. But at the same time, the goal was to play as close to 12 as possible. And as we sit here this second, Georgia Southern is one of 2 teams nationally to play 12 games this fall. Texas State was the other one. And they could have a shot to be the only that plays 13 if the bowl game happens, and depending on the results of the upcoming college football playoff. They could be the only team with 13 games.
That's incredible.
I mean, come on now. That's called doing right.
Without a doubt. The good story you talked about after Dexter Carter's long touchdown run.
Yes.
I was talking with Steve Masterman-Smith on Sunday prior to the Georgia Southern men's basketball game, and he was talking about his days at Florida State. Well, his job back in the late 80s at Florida State was the ball boy. He was the guy, I think they've got one now that's a redhead that sprints up and down the field. I think that's a trend that Steve Masterman-Smith may have started. So he's on the sidelines when Dexter Carter Sr. is playing against Miami. Miami was number 2 in the country at the time, back in 1989. Dexter Carter has an end around against Miami and has a long touchdown run. Florida State ends up winning the game 24-10 over then number 2 Miami. Well, as Dexter Carter is running down the sideline, Steve Masterman-Smith in his head is like, oh crap, I've got to go get the ball to where the new spot's going to be. Ends up taking it in for a touchdown. But if apparently, and I haven't seen the video, Steve said that he was going to bring it. Apparently, on the video, you can see Steve Masterman-Smith running side by side down the sideline. Now, I think Dexter Carter Sr. probably beat him to the end zone.
Well, but if he could beat App State's defensive backs, he probably beat Steve.
Yeah, probably. Well, come Saturday, Dexter Carter Jr. gets the reception, takes it to the house. Steve Masterman-Smith, for whatever reason, the way his brain is wired, he takes off towards the end zone to recreate what Dexter Carter Sr. had done in Florida State.
That's crazy.
And so he told Dexter about it after the game, and he said his face just lit up. So somewhere there needs to be a side-by-side of the footage from Florida State in 89 and Georgia Southern App State in 2020 and Steve Masterman-Smith running side-by-side with Dexter Carter.
He comes up with Georgia Southern's longest pass play in 13 years. You've got that layer, and he announces on social media that he's coming back next year. The first Georgia Southern senior that is actively promoted that he is going to use the NCAA waiver for the additional year. He's going to be back in 21. That's cool.
He's a good one to bring back for Georgia Southern football. Not only what he gives you on the field, but what he does to that locker room and keeping that team together is a big part of what Georgia Southern has seen success in. While we have a moment before we dive into what's coming up for Georgia Southern athletics, we'll take a break and have some Eagle Tales.
Time now for Eagle Tales with Danny Reed.
A little bit different Eagle Tales this week. Give Roger the week off to make sure he bastes his turkey correctly.
He gets tired. Somebody needs to check on the Sandy Cruiser. It's okay. We'll get back to him here very soon.
The Sandy Cruiser will be back. But for now, with the announcement of Georgia Southern football accepting the invitation to the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl, I want to pick your brain on But on what your favorite bowl memories are. Now, I know in 2015 at the GoDaddy Bowl, you were on the sidelines. I know it was a torrential downpour, and every time Blair would send it to you,
yeah,
it would
not the whole
harder.
Game. It was just what I had to be part of the broadcast is what it rained. And you said, "Look, you didn't ask me how I was. You said make sure you keep the bike dry."
Yeah, that's what I was concerned of at the point. But in 2015, you were on the sidelines, and then obviously up in the booth in 2018. When you look back of your time here at Georgia Southern, and I don't mean for it to sound like a eulogy.
Well, let me tell you, son, this place called Georgia Southern, it's mighty special.
But I remember you telling a story of post-game in the GoDaddy Bowl on the sidelines, and
there's a lot of post-game stories from that night.
Somewhere there's a recording of mine and yours conversation throughout the post game of me trying to find people in binoculars for you to go find, and then you kind of running around like an ant in an ant farm trying to find people.
That's pretty close.
Yeah. But you've told the story to me, and I don't know that you've told it on the podcast, of getting to meet a couple of different people down on the field and then getting to talk to Matt Dobson. A lot of different people.
That's a funny one. All right, the person that specifically I remember meeting, and I didn't realize who it was until I looked at his name tag, because it was so loud. He told me what his name was. I didn't really hear it, but he was wearing his name tag. And once I put it together, I mean, really nice leather jacket. I saw the name tag, Ted Smith. You're a pretty big deal.
I believe I've seen your name somewhere.
And I mean, I got my headphones on. I got the mic. I'm trying to find, at that point, Tom Kleinlein and whoever else we can get on for postgame that night. But
yeah, you've got me yelling in your ear.
And Ted had recognized me and said, "Danny, hi, I'm Ted Smith." But at that point, I couldn't realize what he was saying. By the time I got my headset off and I looked, I saw his name tag. Oh, wow. Oh, thank you for what you've done. You see the Ted Smith Family Football Center every time you're at Paulson. You see the name up front and the guy that's responsible for it with his generous donations and all the outstanding work that he has done to promote this university, this athletic department, this football program. It wasn't for very long. We maybe spoke for 2 minutes, but he knew that I was going to be taking over for football starting next year. Someone who had actually listened to some of the broadcasts when he couldn't quite get to some of the home games, very complimentary, and he said that that's why he was as generous as he was, to experience something like that. It's a building block approach. You need to have the little things become the big things to become the biggest things. And we'll talk Camellia here in a minute, too, but that night in Mobile against a Bowling Green team who thought that they were going to come in and mop Ladd People Stadium with the Eagles, it turned out that the second half wasn't going to be that way. And it was 58-27, and with all the people that were flooding on the field to get those couple of minutes with him were pretty special.
You then moved to 2018, where Georgia Southern heads to Montgomery for the Raycom Media Camellia Bowl. And that one was a lot of fun. I don't know that we've ever really talked about this. I'm sure we have in the hours of car rides we've had.
Oh, you and I have.
Yeah, right. But I want you to set up what's going on as Bass trots on the field for the game winner?
Well, Shy Wirtz had just taken off on the scramble.
Yep.
He ran 29 yards on 4th and 10. And as soon as Eastern Michigan had bailed out, because they looked like they're going to blitz the house, and Georgia Southern was having some trouble keeping them out of the backfield. They had some really good guys on that defense. Once they bailed out and sold out to try to get the pass, that was strange because it was right before the snap, and then Shy made that pump. He got Kyle Rockwall off his feet. Then he sped up field for one of the most iconic plays in the history of Georgia Southern football. At that point, you were in field goal range despite it raining, because it does rain when Georgia Southern plays in bowls. It's done it all three times.
Correct. Good thing this one's going to be inside.
God, I didn't even think about that. Oh, I hope there's
I didn't either until then.
Oh, cut a hole in the roof. Russ might do that anyway.
Set up the sprinklers.
If we could actually get Russ into the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, he might find a way to cut a hole in the roof. But anyway, the clock is running, and we're all in the booth thinking, okay, how much closer do they want to get this? Because from there, it would have been just a little bit more than 40 yards, which for Bass, it's gravy, but it's raining. I mean, he had made one from 50 in that direction earlier. He made another one in that direction earlier. But as the final seconds are ticking off, we're realizing that after that last carry, I think it was Wesley Fields, that they weren't going to run another play. And we're looking around thinking, okay, are they going to spike the ball, or are they just going to let it run down? Are they going to call that last timeout, or are they going to just run him out there? And we can almost hear what people are yelling from across the field, because about 10,000 Eagle fans were having these really loud conversations, and somebody was like, what are you doing? What are you doing? They just kept running, and once we realized this was going to be it, stop the clock. 2 seconds became 3 seconds. Bass came on the field with Langan snapping, with Bowerly holding, and I thought back right away to the conversation that Bass and I had just a couple of nights before, right after the pep rally. And he said, look, I haven't had a chance to kick a game winner here. I've had a lot of big kicks here. I've had a lot of long kicks here. I haven't had a chance to kick a game winner here. So I would love that chance, and I'm always ready for it. And to me, it doesn't matter what I did the day before. It doesn't matter what I'm going to do tomorrow. Whether I was 0-4 yesterday or 4-4 yesterday, I am 0-0 today. Now, he was 2-2. Going into that kick, including the 50-yarder at the end of the first half, so that was up 17-7. But on that kick, he was 0-0 on that kick. Chance to win the game, end the season, give the Eagles 10 wins after 10 losses. 40-yard try. As soon as it left his foot, I knew it was in. And at the same time, Aaron Soka's trying to get into our booth to shoot the video, which I had no idea he had done until at least a couple of minutes into post game, and I know he was.
Oh, that's going to be my story.
I know he was treating you like a lamppost, climbing up your back after taking the video. Bass nails the field goal. Celebration. Amazing, amazing, amazing. I'm getting. And then it doesn't even occur until the next day. It was a 40-yard field goal. Yeah. Edwin Jackson had passed away that February.
Yeah.
And we talked about him on the signing day show. That's how we opened the signing day show at the FOC that day, at the TED. And I remember talking about the guys that had been lost that year. It was Ben Holt, Pat Parr, Danny Durham had all passed away. Eagle greats, Eagle players from the 1980s. Guys that Terry had known for a number of years, guys that Terry had played with. We ended with Edwin. His parents made the trip to Montgomery. It's not all that far from Atlanta, where Edwin was a star as a wrestler and a football player at Westlake High, then walked on here at Southern. But to have all that come together and then just explode the way that it did, that's better than trying to write a Hollywood script, because it's already done for you. I don't know if there's a word. No. I don't.
No. And my favorite bowl game story is still involving Aaron Soka, because as we started realizing that you were going to get one more play and it was going to be a field goal from Bass to win it, I look over because there was a big window between our booth and the main press area.
Yeah, we felt like it was a fish tank that we were announcing in.
Yeah.
And I don't know what people heard after we had our call.
Probably a lot.
But.
And so I bang on the window, and I motioned for Aaron to come in our booth. And for the way the telepathy between our minds work is kind of scary to begin with. And so as I'm motioning it in, he realizes that we're wanting to get a video of our vantage point of the field goal. So he comes in, he's got his camera ready, he's got it recording, and you saw the video of what it came from. Again, the video shot by Aaron Soka. Well, the video cuts off before the call is over. The reason for that is because as the ball goes through, about 3 seconds after it goes through, I now have a piggyback ride I'm giving that I didn't know I was giving because Aaron had jumped on my back.
Wait, I didn't get a quarter? What are you doing
right
here?
And so we still talk about it and laugh about it to this day, how he doesn't know why he did it. But all of a sudden, if you watch the entire video, you see it go from right behind you and Terry to it goes to the emblem on my shirt because he jumped on my back and I'm like, what is going on? And he almost knocked us out of the booth, which would have put a little damper on that day.
But. Well, that's another layer to this because the booth that we were in was not a radio booth. It was a camera position that had a gate that was wedged in front of us that you could lift out easily, but we had to do that because we had to get the table up there.
That's how you get the windows open.
And if we would have gotten too excited, then the table would have gone outside into the lower bowl, and we probably would have followed the table.
Yeah, the metal table.
But the back part of that video, I give Terry a high five, and Terry starts going all Fred Sanford, like he's about to go join Elizabeth. And people thought he had a heart attack when the play happened. And then he said, no, my hand was hurt because the high five was so hard. I mean, you're in the moment, you don't realize it. But there's four of us in the booth, and then somehow we got it to commercial with everything else going on. But yeah, that was, you'll never get another one quite like that. You may get great moments, you'll never duplicate that moment.
Georgia Southern will give it a shot on December the 23rd as, again, accepting the invitation to the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl. It'll be a 3 o'clock kick on December the 23rd. We'll be on the air at 1 o'clock Eastern time, 12 noon Central.
You're getting it.
I'm getting it.
You're getting it.
I think I'm batting 1,000 this year.
I'm proud of you.
I know. But we will dive into the La Tech Bulldogs coming up next week in our edition of Inside Eagle Nation. But this is a team 5-4 on the year and a team that didn't play the entire month of November because they had four games either postponed or canceled. They ended up playing the North Texas game the first weekend of December.
And won.
But the Rice game that was supposed to be in Ruston was postponed, later canceled. ULM was canceled. FIU was canceled. And so it's, again, one of those teams that only played 9 games in a regular season, but they're going for 10 in the New Orleans Bowl.
Number one, we're going to have quite a few fans from the Ragin' Cajuns and the Warhawks for this bowl game.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
Because La Tech at one point was a Sun Belt team, but they were never a Sun Belt football team. They played Sun Belt basketball. And I remember thinking back to our spotting charts whenever Georgia Southern plays ULM because Keith Richard, who we love, is the head coach for the Warhawks. He was the head coach at La Tech when they were in the Sun Belt, and he won the Sun Belt Coach of the Year back in 1999. Schedule-wise for them, the way they ended the season last Saturday was against TCU in a game that only got picked up, I think, a week and a half before, and it was not a good day in Fort Worth. They lost 52-10. To end the season. They also lost their starting quarterback, Luke Anthony, who probably shouldn't have been in the game the time that he was. This was fourth quarter. They were already down 35 points. He basically shattered his ankle, had to have surgery, so of course done for the year. So they'll have to figure some things out in terms of signal calling 8 days from now. But to have 33 days in between games, and App State had something close to that earlier this year, and other teams haven't been able to get off the ground, but to have 33 days taken away halfway through the season, then come back and then beat the next team that you play, and make no mistake, North Texas, they can't play defense a lick, but they've got one of the best offenses in the country. So La Tech being able to score more than them turned out to be a pretty big deal.
That one was a 42-31 victory over North Texas in Denton, Texas. But it'll be the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, one of Russ Brown's favorite venues.
I'm still not convinced we're getting him there.
I'm convinced we're getting him there.
I'm not. I hope you're right.
I'm to the point where I'm convinced we're getting him there. Now, what he does there, I have no control over.
It would probably be good, and I can't remember how they set the turf up for previous New Orleans Bowl games, but if there's not a Saints logo on the field, we should be okay. If there
they need
is,
to clear any Saints logos out of that
building. If the fleur-de-lis is anywhere on the field, we may lose them at some point.
But we will dive into the Louisiana Tech Bulldogs in next week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. But a couple of basketball notes to get to you. Georgia Southern women's basketball hoping to pick up a game the end of this week to replace the LaGrange team that was supposed to play tonight, if you're listening to this on time, on Tuesday. That one, again, canceled because of COVID concerns in LaGrange. But as of right now, it's the Georgia State Holiday Classic. It's turned into a SoCon versus Sunbelt Classic, because Georgia Southern will face Chattanooga on Sunday, December the 20th, a 3 p.m. tip-off up on the third floor of the Georgia State Sports Arena, then a 1 o'clock tip-off on Monday the 21st against Western Carolina. Going back to the old SoCon days with some UTC, they don't like to be called UTC. I wonder if they've changed.
They don't?
Well, this is the argument that I always had. They didn't like to be called UTC. They wanted to be called Chattanooga. Okay, but then they come in their shooter shirts say UTC across the front.
So they could say it, but you can't say it.
Well, I did. And then Western Carolina on Monday up in Atlanta. And that's the final non-conference swing for Georgia Southern women's basketball. Then on the men's basketball side, Carver in town tonight on Tuesday, 6 p.m., the tip-off from Hanner Fieldhouse. Will be on the air at 5:30 on the Georgia Southern Sports Network. And then it is off to Florida for a little bit. As Saturday, it'll be at Florida International in Miami. And then facing on Sunday, a Fort Lauderdale team that has just started athletics, technically not an accredited school by the NCAA. And so it won't count for Georgia Southern's record. Technically, it's an exhibition, but that one will be in Miami as well at the Ocean Bank Convocation Center. That's where they've got the court that looks like a wave, and then they've got cabanas in the baseline.
Yeah, the last time that we were there was the 2016 season, and we had played FIU and Florida Gulf Coast, and we're going to Gulf Coast after this, but the court looks like a beach. You've got cabanas behind both baskets. And the side of the floor that we were on that night, we were in the water. Yes. And I'm not a strong swimmer, so I was a little bit worried. But the good thing is Jake Allsmiller made 5 threes, and the Eagles came back and beat the Golden Panthers that night.
So it'll be Saturday, a tip-off against Florida International at 7 p.m. in Miami, Fort Lauderdale on Sunday in Miami as well, and then make the trip across Alligator Alley on Tuesday, December the 22nd, for a 7 p.m. tip-off at Florida Gulf Coast in Fort Myers and Alico Arena, as Georgia Southern and Florida Gulf Coast in the arena that has the thing on top of the basket that tells you what your launch angle and rim.
That's another good
trajectory
story.
And
yeah,
all
when
that
we
is.
When we were there in 16, going in for practice, guys started shooting, and then they would hear 27, 34, and guys were, what is that? And Mark Byington walks in after everybody else with the folded-up practice plan like he always did, and then he looked around and said, oh, that's the shot angle thing. Everybody, what? And shoot it again, but shoot it really high.
8.
That's your shot angle. I'd never seen it before, but the way that it was set up and the technology that is part of college athletics now, similar to Quest Tech that college baseball uses and the TrackMan and all that deal and majors in college and all that, it could tell when the ball leaves your hand the kind of angle that it was not needed to make the shot, but the kind of angle that it had off the hand.
Very strange. And you know how I am with advanced metrics. I'm not all about it.
T-dub, T-dub.
Right, exactly. But they will wrap up the Florida swing December the 22nd, next Tuesday, 7 p.m., the tip-off against Florida Gulf Coast. But we will talk to you next Tuesday, and we will dive deeper into the Florida Gulf Coast Eagles.
So next week, I will be doing this remotely from Southern Florida, and then I will be hopping a very early flight destined for New Orleans and probably be getting there around the time Frank is talking about his beignets from Café Du Monde.
Yes.
That's how I'm picturing this going.
Yeah, bowl travel can never be simple. We talked about it last year, how I took a red eye from Las Vegas and somehow, some way, made it to Orlando in time to get everything rolling.
Well, the Cure Bowl decided to be interesting because that was an earlier kick that day.
Yeah, I didn't appreciate it. But 3 o'clock kickoff for Georgia Southern, well, 2 o'clock Central Time.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, we will get you there, and we will do it.
And it will be great to see you again.
It will. And maybe you will say,
it is well with my soul. And maybe I'll say, all is well with my soul.
Georgia Southern and Louisiana Tech, December the 23rd in the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl. Before we wrap this one up, we've got ideas for our degree of separation that we've been asking for.
Ooh.
Now,
Purdy.
It just coming yesterday, and so we had to take some time. So hopefully next week we will have your degrees of separation. But Taylor wanting degrees of separation for Chad Lunsford and Art Briles.
Oh.
Chris Foster and Kevin Sumlin. Dimitri Donald and the tie-wearing PJ Fleck.
Okay, hold on 1 second. I'm going to take away the Chris Foster and Kevin Sumlin right now.
All right.
Chris Foster worked with Bob DeBess, who worked with Kevin Sumlin at Minnesota.
That didn't take long.
So we could cross that one off, but we can figure out the rest of them.
Got it. Jeff Munkin and Butch Davis. Vic Cabral and Hugh Freeze. Scott Sloan and Lane Kiffin.
Well, it was Jeff Munkin and Butch Davis?
Yes. The wheels are turning.
Well, that should be just Jeff Munkin worked with Chad Lunsford, who worked with Alan Mogridge, who worked with Butch Davis. Okay. Alan Mogridge was the O-line coach here in 16, then left in 17 to go with Butch to FIU.
Well, you've got 2 out of 6. So we only need 4 more.
The Dimitri Donald one's going to be interesting.
Yeah, that one's going to be fun.
I know the first part I need to go with, but I don't know the other links in the chain
yet. Connectings.
Yeah.
But Chad Lunsford, Art Briles, Dimitri Donald, PJ Fleck, Vic Cabral, Hugh Freeze, Scott Sloan, and Lane Kiffin are the ones that we have to do next. And again, you can tweet any more that you would like for us, because we've talked about all the time how in athletics, and it doesn't necessarily have to be football, there are connections all around. Anybody in athletics, it seems like you can, within about 6 degrees of separation, you can connect the two. So, we put the challenge out there to try to stump the chumps, I guess. And
it's not a nice way to talk about us.
Well, it's nicer than some people might. So, we've got 4 we have to get through next week.
Depending on who you follow on Twitter, I guess.
I guess so. So, you can send them to us by tweeting at GS Sports Network or text us 912-274-3607.
So I've got a week, and then while I'm in Florida, those will be some ones.
Yeah, while you're coming across Alligator Alley, you can start noodling it a little bit more and see if something comes to you.
We better hurry up. Carver's about to start.
We should.
Okay.
Georgia Southern and Carver tonight, 6 o'clock. The tip-off will be on the air at 5:30. For the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.